with Austin Bechtel behind the glass. Bob Pompeiani, Joe Starkey continue here at 11:14 on a beautiful day. And unfortunately, most people are going to take this day to get back on track. Austin, I mean, there are so many people out there. I'm looking at videos of like telephone poles on fire. People have had trees fall through their roof. Roofs like at the Fiore's restaurant completely blown off.
That was insane to see.
It really was. I mean, that's, I don't know what kind of wind gusts there had to be, but it must have been 80 to 90 miles an hour.
Yeah, so. And you just wonder, is everything okay inside? From all accounts that I heard, things are good. Things are a major crisis is avoided. Like, obviously, the roof blowing off is significant, but thoughts are with everyone out there affected.
We've been talking a lot about the Pirates, and I'm sure we have some leftover calls in a minute, but the other story that's still, it will be percolating as we go forward, is the new coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins, who it might be. We saw yesterday that Rick Tocchet made a decision, and he's not going to be back with Vancouver, but he also said, I'm going to keep all options open. I think Rutherford wanted to keep him, but he's a guy who has, obviously, familiarity here, so he's beyond the list. But the guy I really like is David Carl, that coach out of the University of Denver. He's a young guy who's won a lot. Two NCAAs, two World Juniors for Team USA. So what direction do you think they will go in?
I don't think they're going to go Tocchet, just because the way that Dubas spoke at the press conference, Bob, I think that he, without fully saying it in all caps, is embracing the rebuild, is going with it, at least as much as you can with still having Crosby, Malkin, Letang, and their salaries on the roster. I think that they ultimately should go younger coach, and it wouldn't make that much sense. As much as I like Tocchet, does it make sense from Tockett's perspective to come in here with a rebuilding team at the age he's in his 60s and try to grow this thing, not exactly from the bottom up, but pretty close to it? A younger coach to grow and develop with younger players is ultimately the best thing for them.
Yeah, and that's why I like David Carl. And I also think there's a guy on the Washington staff has been mentioned, Mitch Love. He's up and coming. And you know, in hockey, unlike football, where you know all the defensive coordinators, the offensive coordinators, and guys who are on the fast track moving forward, you may not know many of these names, but Mitch Love is held in wide regard as he's going to be a coach one day at a high level. But I still think David Carl is the guy I would go to based on his success. He was involved in the Chicago Blackhawks, and he withdrew from that situation. But honestly, Joe, Austin, when you're a guy looking for an opportunity, you're looking for a place where you can grow with younger guys. Do the Penguins have enough younger guys for a coach to grow with, or will they get impatient with him? And if you look at all these coaching openings, they all have the same problem. Boston's older. They don't have a whole bunch in their system from what I read. The Rangers are going backwards, it looks to me. Kraken, they may have some, may not have some. Anaheim is a team that with a lot of young talent, but it's rudderless at this point. San Jose may make a change. I don't know. I mean, who do you like, Joe? And I don't have to mention a name, but do you mention an old, you know, recycled coach versus a young up and coming coach? Which
young,
direction?
Young.
Okay.
I mean, I want to go the Capitals direction, you know, where it's more of an unknown guy. He came out of the Leaf system when Dubas was there.
Right.
And somebody who can instill that kind of structure into a team and grow with the young guys. That's the type I want. Now, is it the guy from Denver? I don't know.
You'd like
to know. Nobody knows. But my question would be, do the vets around here want to play for a college coach? I don't know.
Well, if you have structure, if they do what they have to do to win, I don't think it matters if you're young, old, whatever. That's why I think it's open for other guys who are recycled, retreads, whatever you're going to call them. Although, how many lives does Tortorella have? How many lives does Laviolette have? I mean, they've won before, but
that.
I don't want that.
Well, okay,
either.
Well, let's get to Rick Tocchet.
I don't want him. I like Rick, but I don't think he's the right dude for. I think he's going to end up in Philadelphia.
Like there's a place pre-picked. That's what Rutherford seemed to allude to.
Right.
Like Rick has an idea of where he wants to go. Is it here or Philly? I wonder. I don't want him either. And why would he go to Philly?
Because he has history there. And again, I look at the record, and it's not been all that great as a head coach. Now, I realize he was with Arizona for a lot, and I like Rick. I think he can get through. He got through to Phil Kessel when nobody else could. You know, he has that way.
I'm not sure I agree with Josh Yowie that he's one of the best coaches in the NHL. I'm sorry, I don't agree with that. He's done a good job here and there. He's never made a playoff run. I realize he's been in some difficult situations, but I think he's a good coach, so we don't disagree there. And he's also in his 60s now. Like if he has the pick of a bunch of teams, wouldn't you want to go someplace where you can make a legit kick at the can here instead of a rebuild?
Yeah, but again, as I described, which teams do you think have that? You can pick apart all of these rosters. The Boston Bruins were in sell-off mode at the end of the year. They got rid of a guy that was beloved by those in Boston, Brad Marchand. They don't have, other than Pasternak is top-end talent.
I think the Rangers you could.
Maybe, but they also have problems. They regressed last
year. Oh, they have problems, yeah. They do.
So, I mean, every one of these has sort of a downside to it.
Oh, here's
unless
another.
Unless you're Anaheim and you're going to throw a lot of money at a coach and you have some good young talent coming through your system.
Here's another thing that Josh said, and he's great, of course, Josh Yowie.
Oh, I like Josh a lot. He's tapped in for sure.
Awesome. And a very nice man. He's a Sacramento Kings fan. Did you know that?
He lost a lot of weight, too. I have to ask him how to get rid of guts.
But here's another area in which I disagreed with him. He said the Penguins remain a very attractive gig for a coach. Do they? Is this an attractive job? Limits, what do you think?
No. I mean, at the moment, what are you working with? It would have been attractive 5 years ago, I think, when you still had Crosby, Malkin, Letang somewhat in their prime, and Crosby is still in his prime. Letang, I question. Malkin's not. What are you working with outside of maybe Mirishoff at goaltender, which we still haven't seen him play in the NHL yet?
Well, Koivunen's pretty good from what I saw. I mean, I think McGroarty will be good.
Sure,
both young.
But doesn't every team in the whole NHL have a couple good young players?
But the Penguins also have a lot of picks, and they could change things around rather quickly if they do it right.
It seems like every time this team gets one young, promising player, people start to celebrate. Every team, and I realize it's because, you know, if you've been in a desert for 10 years, you want a cup of water. But every team has young players. Every team has prospects. Most teams have better farm systems than the Penguins. I'm not so sure this is a great job right now.
I still think it is. And I think, you know, whoever comes here will be given a pretty good amount of time to turn it around. And I think you have to look at the system. There may be some other guys that they've drafted who are better than we know of right now. So, I do agree with what he said, though. He's going to take his time, and he should. He should not make this decision until he goes through a wide web of a search.
Well, one of the things he mentioned as to why it's an attractive job is because, you know, of a rabid fan base and things like that. I don't know, man. I think if this thing continues to go south here, there's going to be nobody in that building.
Well, that's been the case in a lot of other buildings as well.
Sure.
I mean, Chicago goes through that. It doesn't matter if you're not, and that's why I go back to the winning. Winning is the most important promotional item you can have.
He said, Yowie said it remains among the best jobs in hockey. I categorically disagree with that.
I think it's a good job. I think a young coach would like this job because I do think there are some people who they're going to be counting on. And goaltending is the number one issue here for sure. They have to figure that out. And they have three young goaltenders in their system. Philip Larson's a guy who doesn't get a lot of talk, but he's apparently really good.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Mirishov, can he sustain that and move it to the NHL level? At age 21, that'd be great if he could. They had Gustafson. See what happens sometimes when you wait? They traded Gustafson for Broussard, and now he's the number one guy in Minnesota, although they lost last night. I think Fleury actually got into that game
last night. He did.
But Gustafson has been terrific, and he was a Four Nations guy.
Well, the reasons given as to why Josh thinks this is one of the, quote, best jobs in hockey: whoever coaches the Penguins gets to coach Sidney Crosby. That's true. But at some point in the not too distant future, it's going to be a declining Sidney Crosby toward the end of his career. He says the owner, Fenway Sports Group, has deep pockets. Well, that's true too. But it's also a very different kind of ownership, not a very popular ownership, a more corporate ownership, and an ownership that has alienated Mario Lemieux and that was looking for minority investors pretty recently. And I'm wondering also if it's an ownership that has awakened to the fact that it may have made a giant mistake buying the Penguins and may want to get out of it altogether. So I don't know if that's a selling point. Pittsburgh is one of America's great hockey markets and boasts state-of-the-art facilities and a loyal fan base. They're a great hockey market when the Penguins are winning. Yeah, and they've done a lot of winning. But I think it's their turn to probably do a lot more losing, and it ain't such a great market when they're losing.
But I think you can say that about all hockey markets. I really do. Look at Sunrise, Florida. Not until they won did they get sellout crowds.
Sure, yeah.
And before that, it was, you know, festival seating. And they may return to that one day. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast, especially with so much money involved in getting a ticket what it costs to go to games. You better win to get people to
right,
come out.
Right, so what's so attractive about this job?
I think, again, Crosby is an attraction. I don't think he's going to slow down in the next few years. You have him to center, and you hopefully have enough young talent where you can – and I think you mentioned Washington. You know, he came in there and did a pretty good job with a structure that they all bought into.
Yeah.
Structure does matter in hockey. In fact, it's probably the number one thing you have to do as a coach. You know, the rest of it takes care of itself. Structure on the power play, structure shorthanded. I even think structure on 3-on-3. There should be structure in that because the Penguins seem not to have it in 3-on-3. And for all the talent they had, they should have won more games.
Well, he's also the new coach is walking into a situation where the team is anchored down by a multitude of horrible contracts and at least a couple guys who really have never seemed and still don't seem interested in the whole goal prevention side of things. You're also, unless they get rid of him, going to have to deal with Erik Karlsson if you walk in here. So none of that was mentioned here. Like, I get there are good points, but there are also some very bad points for whoever walks in here as the new coach.
I think if I'm Kyle Dubas, though, to make it a little easier on my new head coach, whoever he may be, I would try to revamp that defensive, third and fourth pairing, fifth and sixth pairing. I would try to go out and get guys who fit the defensive-minded blue liner more so than what they have. You have elite offensive guys there, but you got to have a counteraction. And I think Marcus Pettersson fit well with whomever he played with because he was the defensive mind of that other person, whether it was Letang or whether it was Karlsson. They need people like that. And if they could somehow get him, it would make things change, I think, from that point of view.
Well, here's one name that's been on people's lists, including Josh's, that really intrigues me. And that's sort of along the Carberry lines, is Todd Nelson. He's led the Hershey Bears to 3 championships, considered among the AHL's best coaches. Josh writes he was a Penguins draft pick in 89, not afraid to push for offense, and AHL coaches often find success in the NHL, Josh writes. And the Penguins, of course, are a great example of that. That I don't know about that specific guy. I didn't know who he was before, yesterday. But that archetype appeals to me, Bob.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. He's another guy who will be on their list for sure.
Much more than the Torts and Laviolettes of the world.
I don't know. How many more jobs do you think those guys will get?
Probably as many as they want.
Really? Do you actually think they're going to just continue to be retreaded?
How many have they had? How many have they had between them?
That's my point. And both have won. So because they've won, which is why Sullivan's going to reset the market financially, because he's won twice.
Laviolette's coached every team in the league.
I know, and that's why I just can't imagine another team going. How about Bruce Boudreau? We haven't heard from him in a while. He needs some wings and have that sauce drip off his face.
We need
some of that Bruce Boudreau.
Laviolette has coached 6 teams between you and Limits. Can you name those teams, Bob?
We'll say that again?
Laviolette has coached 6 teams. Name them.
Philly.
Yes.
New York Rangers.
Yep, that's 2.
Those are the main 2 that were off the top of my head.
I would say, let's see, Laviolette.
He didn't coach in New Jersey, right?
No, he didn't.
No.
Amazingly. He took one team to a Stanley Cup final against the Penguinis.
That's what I'm trying to think of.
Nashville.
That's right. Well, he was the coach of Nashville then. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Carolina, yeah.
The Islanders, the West Coast at all?
The Capitals. It's unreal.
He is dominating the East Coast.
It's ridiculous.
It's almost like Deontay Johnson going to every team in the AFC North. He's one away from
except
that.
Except he goes backwards, Bob.
And maybe he'll have to go backwards to get from Baltimore, now to Cleveland to Cincinnati.
I know. Somebody put a video out on that. It was great. So I had trivia questions, other ones for you guys, and now I'm disappointed that I've lost both of them.
Well, it would have helped if you were here on time, so I didn't have to go on a hockey tangent.
I know. Oh, I do have this. I have this. Give us a 6-pack item.
Uh-oh, here we go.
A limitless wonder.
We're going to be drunk by the end of this show.
Yeah, let's do this. The Toronto Maple Leafs, Bob.
They did it again last night.
Are in trouble again.
At home, they can't clinch a series.
They were up 3-0. Now it's 3-2 going back to Ottawa. And, man, they're going to be squeezing those hockey sticks to sawdust. They're going to look like Henry Davis at the plate. I mean, this is getting ugly, Bob.
Wow. So pressure is clearly on them again here.
100%.
So Ottawa goes home with just, playing with house money here. If we win, we go back to your place with a chance to eliminate you. And then all those ghosts of Toronto Maple Leafs gone by.
Can you imagine the tension in Game 7 in that building?
Kyle Dubas has got to want that.
Well, yeah, I mean, Dubas was 0 for 5 in Toronto. He never did what he was supposed to do there, so all five seasons were failures, and now he's 0 for 2 with the Penguins. He's 0 for 7, Bob. Tommy Pham's hitting better than him. So only four NHL teams have ever come back from a 3-0 deficit in a series. I want you to name them. Go ahead, Limits
Penguins
and Bob.
Penguins against the Islanders.
Islanders against the Penguins, yeah.
1975, yep. And that was Gary Innes and goal. I remember all that. Yeah. Eddie Westfall got the game winner, didn't he?
And the game yeah, and then seven. He went to Bloomfield to drink with the Penguins players. That's a fact.
I would say Columbus over Tampa Bay.
Josh, you always said complimenting me will get you everywhere. I like that. That's
is that. Am I right about that?
What?
Columbus over Tampa?
No, you're wrong about that.
Didn't they have a 3-0 lead and they lost to Tampa in the first round a few years ago? No?
Yeah, didn't that happen?
I think.
I know it did.
No, it's not listed here, man. They got this wrong if they did.
Well, wait a minute. Don't you remember they were up big and they blew it in the first round?
I know,
and then the next year they win a Stanley Cup.
Okay, you can have that be right.
I'm just asking.
But it's not on my list.
So your list is the only thing that matters?
It's from the AP, Bob.
Okay. Well, maybe you're. There was
the
a comeback in there.
Tampa
Bay was up big in that series, and somehow
yes.
Columbus
well,
came
name
back.
The other teams then.
Calm down.
Limits,
you have all
can
the
you
answers.
Name the teams? You know what? Are you going to pipe
this
in at all
this is an unfair situation because he has always the answers in front on premeditated quiz, and he puts
question.
Us on the spot.
This is a hard guess.
I mean, I said Quivia. It's a combination of quiz and trivia. It's called Quivia.
Okay, wait.
The 42 Leafs.
Ron
Cook covered that team. Had the only sit-down with
wait,
Bobby
Wait, don't say
Bond.
The next one, please.
really, they were going to get the 47 or whatever Leafs?
Yeah, if you know your hockey history limits.
All right, well, give me a year on this next one.
2010. I'm sorry, Bob, you're wrong again.
Go ahead, give it to us.
Somebody beat New Jersey.
The Flyers in 2010, the 14 Kings on their way to the Cup, I believe. And that's it. That's your four teams.
All right. Are you sure about Tampa? I got to make sure of this. This strikes me
you
as
you can certainly go ahead and look it up, Bob.
Bay.
What's going on here? I had another really good trivia question for you guys,
playoffs.
And now I've lost it. I was sitting watching the Pirates lose again with my wife, and there was here it is. Oh, I know what it was. Bob, there was a 4 home run game the other night. Did you see that?
Yes,
Limits?
Suarez.
Yeah.
Eugenio.
I think 19th player to do so.
And the interesting thing about that is less common than perfect games.
I was just going to ask you that, and now you've already answered it, and now you ruined it for Limits.
Once again, I can't read your mind. It's very difficult to do that because that's a mind of somebody who goes deep into just about everything. And, you know, I look at you sometimes and I wonder what's going on in your mind.
I don't even want to know sometimes.
It's trivia. Tell me which is the least common. It was Suarez who hit four homers the other day, right?
Yes, four.
Tell me the least common of these occurrences in pro sports. You ready?
Yes.
Four home run games, perfect games, 500-yard pass games in the NFL, 70-point games in the NBA or double hat trick games in the NHL. In other words, 6 goals. What's the least common of those?
I would say the 4 home run game followed closely by the double hat trick.
I think 70 points in an NBA game is close. The ones I can think of is obviously Wilt.
We don't Kobe need the Kobe. List. Yeah, we don't need the list.
I think that 70-point games in the NBA, that or double hat trick.
And I didn't mean to insult you. What do you mean that or double hat trick? Which one is the least common?
I'm going to say 4 home
what
run games.
What have we all gone full?
I'm going to say 70.
4 home run games.
70 points?
Yeah.
You both couldn't be more wrong. The least common of those.
Double hat trick.
By far is the double hat trick.
I said that. So did you.
No, you
did. I did.
I gave Bob and I both gave the caveat. We had an out there.
It ain't about caveats.
We had an out there.
It's what's your answer and you were both wrong.
Well, I said follow closely by the double hat trick. I thought.
Well, it isn't closely and you were wrong. There's only been
eight. He takes great joy in saying it.
He does. He loves it. He loves to say, wrong.
And you're wrong.
Bob, wrong. Nope, wrong.
How many double hat trick games have there been?
8.
10.
8.
Oh, you looked that one up.
No,
he said
it.
You had to look that.
He said 8 and then asked us the question.
Oh, well, good on you for listening.
I didn't hear
Usually
it.
You only listen to half the show and you're back there distracted when Pony comes in and talks to you or Marty Tuffer yesterday.
Or when I'm taking the notes or podcasting or talking to callers.
You know how much he
callers?
Has to do back there. I'll give him credit. He is multitasking to the point where he has to do a lot of stuff.
How many?
It's not easy.
This I was surprised about. How many 70-point games have there been in the NBA?
Five.
Well, then it would be the least one.
10.
Limit?
I think about 14.
15. Mm-hmm. I would not have guessed that many.
I thought it were fewer than that.
That's a lot. How many 500-yard pass games in NFL history?
20.
Wrong.
25.
Wrong. What? You look this up.
Come look at my screen. No, I didn't.
Bob, how's he guessing everyone on
the
nose? Obviously.
I'm not looking it
25,
up.
25, 5. Yes, you are. You can't just guess these and have them right
I
on the nose.
I said 20. I didn't go over. That's good. The price is right. I went.
And I'm giving you credit
I'm
over him.
I'm guessing round
he's
numbers.
Cheating. How many perfect games in Major League Baseball? 20, I'm sure Limits will guess it right on the number.
Now, this I actually do know is either 22 or 23. I do
That's
know
That's what
that.
I just said.
Bob, has anybody explained to this guy that when you asked them for an answer, it has to be one.
22, I'll go with.
Yes.
20, okay.
He said, this one I know, it's either 22 or 23.
I knew that because I knew that.
Then you don't know.
But I knew there were fewer
not you,
four-run
him.
Home run games than perfect games or no-hitters.
The question seemed fairly self-explanatory. How many perfect games have there been in Major League history?
Fine, to be different, I'll go 24.
I'll say 19.
It's 24. He obviously in the interim.
Come in here.
Up.
Look.
No.
Look at the screen
it.
Right
I'm
here.
Done.
I'm going to lift
done.
It up.
I'm done with this
turn
guy.
Turn it around. Look. You see this screen?
No,
turn
I don't.
Forget
it. You can't be four
Bob,
for four
it?
You, but you can't
look,
be four
not
for four.
Nobody.
Where's your phone?
Yeah.
You could look at that screen all you want, but
nobody,
there's another.
He just
there's a secondary
suddenly
source.
Suddenly changed. He said.
You can't
listen,
hit the exact
this is how
number
this
on four straight.
I said limits. Number of perfect games. He said, I think I know this. 22 or 23. Then I went into a soliloquy on how he can't give me a straight answer. And then we come back to him and he says, just to be different, I'll go 24.
Now you're insulting my intelligence.
No, I'm insulting your integrity.
come here and look at the history on my computer then and you'll be able to see.
Right,
Bob? You'll see it. You'll
I don't believe it. Any of this.
This is ridiculous. There's nobody who could walk in here and give us the number of double hat tricks.
No.
Perfect games and 70-point games on the number without cheating.
I mean, you could be close, but the exact number, that's hard to believe.
I didn't give you the exact number for the home run games. I was one or two off.
No, you weren't.
No, you weren't.
Yes, I was.
You had it exactly right.
Now he's lying about this.
The texters will say it.
All right, Bob, I haven't taken this long to drink a six-pack since I was about 19 years old, but we go back to it because there's so many juicy topics. Limits crack one for us, would you please? We had Charlie Campbell on yesterday from Walter Football, and the focus has now turned to next year's quarterback class. I'll start you with this question, Bob. I truly get the feeling that the Steelers are gathering resources and gearing up to do whatever they have to do to get into the top 10 next year, assuming they're not in the top 10 already from their record, and get a quarterback. Is that what you're seeing here, that's what's trending?
I think that's what I was talking about all along. I thought their plan was to do exactly that, but I thought it would start with Justin Fields and then do this next year as well. Regardless of who's here, they're going to do it next year. I think, Austin, you had the same feeling. That's why I was so happy when they didn't. I know you're friends with Jackson Dart, and I'm not throwing darts at your way here, Joe, but that's why I didn't want any first-round quarterbacks taken. I think they're going to do that next year, and I think there'll be a deeper class. Many of these guys will do what a lot of these guys have done before them, which is go from one year to the next and make big leaps. When you see them perform, you'll start to know these guys by name more than most people do. That's what happened with most of them. When you look at Jackson Dart 2 years ago, where he is now, when you look at Kenny Pickett 1 year to the next, where he was and how his draft stock went up, all of these guys have the opportunity to do that. And I think there are more of them, which is why I think their plan was next year be the year.
Limits, crack another one as I respond to Bob.
We're going to go to chugging now. We're
Thank
beyond
you. Yeah,
six
we're,
pack right. kegs. We're chugging.
Here's the problem with what you just said. There's this assumption that next year's class is going to be exponentially better than this year's class. We don't even know if Arch Manning is going to be in next year's class. A lot of people think he's going to stick around no matter how the year goes. But whether he is or isn't, are we sure that next year's class is better? You sure you're going to get
Are
your
you
guy?
Are you sure that this year's class is better than next year's? You're making assumptions,
too.
No,
I didn't say that.
You said you're making an assumption, and then you would be, too, that Jackson Dart's going to be an NFL superstar.
I didn't say superstar.
Franchise
I say he's
going
to be a very good quarterback, yes. But,
okay.
But no, we're talking in the context of the Steelers putting their eggs in next year's basket. So there seems to be, among football types, the assumption that next year's quarterback class is vastly superior to this year's. Charlie Campbell from Walter Football. I asked him that question yesterday.
I would say, I think immediately three kind of stand out to me as having that potential, you know, as prospects, like Arch Manning at Texas, Garrett Nussmeier at LSU. I think Lenoris Sellers from South Carolina is a really interesting quarterback to watch in terms of dual threat guy. Drew Aller from Penn State, I think, showed progress late last season. So I think he has the potential to continue to rise. So those four kind of jump out to me. And that's also a good sign, because you'll have guys, you know, rise up. And, you know, no, a year ago, no one was talking about Cam Ward going number one overall. A year later, that's what happens. So, you know, there could be a Joe Burrow out there, a guy who's been buried on a depth chart that none of us have seen play at an elite level, and he's going to explode this year.
And that was last year, or that was yesterday. Before that, I asked him, are we sure that next year's class will be better? He said, not necessarily. Then I asked him to rank the four, and that's what you heard there. And then the real story now, Bob, or a big one that we're going to be able to monitor firsthand, is what about Drew Aller? Mel Kiper thinks he's going to be the first pick in the draft. Let's hear Charlie on Drew Aller, and then let's hear you, Bob.
I think he has potential, but he definitely has to improve. I think he showed progress late in the season in terms of field vision and toughness and things that I think are important qualities for him to keep, you know, building in the right direction. But it's not a done deal. Absolutely. None of those guys are. Arch Manning hasn't played enough yet to say definitively that he's worthy of going high in the first round. You want to see more out of Nussmeier as well. So all these guys have a lot to prove.
There you go.
And I would say the same about this year. I would say every class probably has that. You can, again, the thought of Cam Ward being a number one pick 2 years ago was out of the question.
Yeah,
you know,
but are we sure next year's class is better than this year's?
How does anyone be sure? For example, I'll look back in time here, and everyone rates and grades these classes, and that's why I'm kind of reluctant to do it, just because I don't know. I'll go back to two specific drafts for the Steelers, 20 and 19. Okay, Chase Claypool. No, that was a second pick. He was their first. Alex Highsmith, good pick. After that, Anthony McFarlane, Antoine Brooks Jr., Carlos Davis, and between there, Kevin Dotson, and he turned out to be a good player. In 19, Devin Bush, Deontay Johnson, Justin Lane, Benny Snell, Zach Gentry, Sutton Smith, Isaiah Buggs, Ulysses S. Grant, Gilbert, and Derwin Guay. None of those players, only one is on the roster. That's just 6 and 5 years ago.
But you know, some years you can look ahead and say that's going to be an unbelievable quarterback class. Are the Steelers right to put all their eggs in next year's basket?
They're right or wrong, they have to make a decision. And their decision, I think, based on what we've seen, is they weren't going to take a quarterback this year unless it was late.
Right.
To fill out the room mostly, but they expect, you never know what you're going to get. But I think they have to believe, because if not, they would have probably taken someone this year, knowing that Aaron Rodgers will be a one-year deal, that next year is going to be better, or at least their scouts have told them that.
All right. We'll see if they're right.
And who knows who's right or wrong? I don't know.
How about Aller? What do you think of him so far? If I asked you right now, do you want to make that guy the face of your franchise, would you say yes?
I would say no.
So would I. You limits?
I think after this year that it's going to be closer to yes,
right,
but at
now,
the moment I'm saying
you got it. In the Penn State part.
I'm going to side with yes. I think he's going to grow a lot this year.
He might. He might be somebody who turns the direction of his career around based on how he performs in his final year.
That wasn't the question, oh, limitless wonder.
All right, the answer is yes.
So if he was in this year's draft as with his current career, would you have taken him as your first quarterback over Cam Ward?
Yes.
You would have made him the face of your franchise.
Yeah, I think that his traits and projectables are better.
Would I have made?
If Drew Aller had been eligible for this year's draft.
But I've gone on record already as telling you, I think Cam Ward's not going to be that good in the NFL either. I think he'll be an okay, serviceable guy, but not a franchise guy. I don't think any of these guys is going to be what these teams expect them to be.
I'll be interested to see. Now, you still have people talking about the Merrill Hodge, for example, when the 2020 draft came out, said there's only one guy who was worthy of being drafted in the first round, and that's Joe Burrow. Yet we've seen Jordan Love come out of that draft. We saw
the guy from L.A., right? Is he in that?
Justin Herbert come out of the draft, and Jalen Hurts, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Was that the same year?
And Tua.
Yeah. Tua also, but yeah.
So.
And that's what I mean. You just don't know.
That turned out to be a pretty darn good quarterback year.
Yeah. I mean, you could hit or miss on a lot of this stuff. I mean, how do you explain Dak Prescott going the fourth round? How is Brock Purdy going to the end? They had all the scouting reports on these guys, and somehow there are mistakes made. So we're in an inexact business. We're trying to make what we think. They have a lot more information than we do, and I'm going to believe that they think next year is a better quarterback crop.
Well, they may have a lot more information, but nobody knows how to draft a quarterback. So I'm just not believing this idea that, oh, next year, just wait till next year on these quarterbacks. In fact, a lot of their profiles sound to me a lot like the guys who were drafted this year. Now, Arch Manning would be the exception. I think everybody looks at that guy and says, man, when he comes to fruition here, then you're talking about a stud. I think when people were looking ahead 2 years before Dan Marino, John Elway, and Jim Kelly, they were thinking that's going to be a big quarterback year, Bob. When people were looking ahead to Ben Roethlisberger, Eli Manning, and Phil Rivers, that seemed to be pretty projectable. Next year's doesn't seem to be that projectable to me. Other than him, I think everybody thinks he's going to be a star.
There's also going to be somebody who comes out of nowhere and really turns it on and does something he didn't expect, and he will move straight up the draft board. I mean, you can say in many ways Jackson Dart was that guy this year, and that might mean good things for the New York Giants, or it might mean they could get it wrong also. I it's just so hard. The NFL is so hard when you assess quarterbacks, only because you're going from quarterbacks in college who know the teams they play largely have weaknesses all over the field. They have one or two good players, three or four good players, not 11. In the NFL, you're going to face, so that's the difference. Can you gravitate to that next level?